Hello, welcome to CarCast, an Edmunds podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, here with Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Matt. How are you?
Good. So you're back, you're home, bit of traveling. And then, of course, when you're done with that, you've got to come back and edit the videos and write the stories and do the work. It's not all just globetrotting and taking photos of driving cars and then work itself out.
You miss the look after two small children, which seems to be the key issue.
Yeah, you know, you teach come them back, to start back. Writing and editing.
Exactly. You've had like a week in Spain, you're all jet lagged, you're not feeling good, you know, three massive flights to get home. And then here are two small children because you've been away on vacation for a week. But I'm sure lots of people listening can empathize with that.
Yeah. We've got plenty of stuff to get into. Just as a reminder, for those of you listening to the podcasts are available on YouTube as well. So if you want to see us, and I'm not quite sure why you would, but if you do, it is available on YouTube as well. And
you then can see my rather fetching IKEA drapes behind me.
Yeah. Although we do try to throw up some graphics of the cars and stuff that we're talking about as well, assuming the screen sharing seems to work. It doesn't always seem to work on my end, but I think it does in the video. But anyway, it's available on iTunes, and I always appreciate you guys listening. Available on YouTube as well. One of the things we got into last week was New York Auto Show and the trip you took, but along the way you were in Spain for the Porsche Taycan, and now we can talk about that. It's been some pretty significant changes, more than just a facelift, right? It's not quite a mid-cycle facelift.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you look at it, you'd think they've done nothing to it. They've tweaked the front end a little bit. So the headlights are new, which gives it more of a kind of wider athletic stance. The rear's slightly changed. You can now have an illuminated Porsche badge at night if you really want to, you know, show off in West Hollywood. So aesthetically, it looks pretty much the same, both inside and out. But under the skin, as the cliche goes, they've actually changed a great deal. And talking to the Porsche engineers when we're out there in Spain, even they accept that they're changing more than they typically would in a mid-cycle refresh. I mean, we've seen it a bit with 911s and stuff in the past, where they went from naturally aspirated to turbo on and that sort of thing. But this is a big change. And really, it's just a reflection of how fast the technology in the EV universe is moving. And of course, they've got the Macan EV. We're driving that later this month. So they were faced with a situation: if we don't update the Taycan, we're going to have a Macan EV, which is cheaper with the latest technology, and our kind of flagship EV with kind of yesterday's gear. So they've done a lot to this vehicle, from performance to charging to range, just a whole, you know, swathe of software and hardware updates.
Right on. Let's talk about the previous gen, and it good car, but some people were just a little like, maybe it's not quite there yet to the Porsche. I don't know, for the hardcore Porsche enthusiasts, they were saying it just wasn't quite there yet. I don't know if that was sort of an ergonomic thing on the interior or just the dynamics of the vehicle, but it seemed like that's what Porsche was trying to address, going more after that hardcore Porsche enthusiast, as opposed to just making it, I don't know, like the Audi e-tron.
Yeah, it's a hard thing because the Taycan was their first real, you know, first EV. You know, it was an attempt to sort of make a Porsche and make it an EV and show that actually there's a future for the company. I actually think they did a really good job of it. You know, if you're a diehard, then, you know, you miss the sound. Of course, you miss the sound. And then also, you know, you can't get away from the fact that EVs are just heavy. And we drove this on a track, and actually it's a strange the way they've done it. So we drove, this is a standard Taycan, and then they've done the Turbo GT.
Yeah.
And that is still under one of these embargoes. So basically the idea of an embargo, we talked about this before, is you all kind of sign up to publish together. So it means everybody gets a fair crack at it. So we've sort of launched all the stuff about the, what you might call the normal Taycan. And then we've got more stuff coming, including a video. I think it's this Friday, if you're listening, It's Friday, what's that, the 13th or something, we'll be going live with a video about the Turbo GT and the Vizac edition, which is like a two-seater special.
The 12th.
So that's the way they set it up. And basically, yeah, you're right, Matt. They're trying to, they recognize that if we are going to go full EV, they're going to keep the 911 gas-engined or hybrid, it's going to be like a hybrid, for as long as they possibly can. Boxster, Cayman, Macan, Taycan, all going to be EV. Now, state of the market, are they going to think maybe they've gone a bit early with some of this stuff? But we'll see. But yeah, that's the strategy. You'll have, for gas, you'll have Panamera hybrid, 911 as a hybrid, and then everything else will be EV. Although there also, we've seen rumors this week of a three-row SUV Porsche as well. So there's a bit more to come.
Yeah, I and saw that also, which I wasn't really expecting. I don't know. I guess I haven't been following it quite as close, but yeah, because the lineup was like gas, EV, and now there's sort of in the SUV world, Macan and this three-row sort of EV, EV.
Yeah, and I miss Cayenne out of that. So you've got, yeah, so in the gas world, you've got Panamera, Cayenne hybrid, potentially three-row, bigger SUV, and then the 911, and they're still making, and I think will continue as long as people keep buying it or as long as the legislation doesn't stop them, the gas-powered Macan as well. But Porsche came to the conclusion, which not everybody shares, certainly BMW doesn't, that you can't compromise. You either do an EV or you do a gas. What they seem to be unwilling to do is what BMW has done and say, let's make a really great Macan and we'll either stick an electric motor in the front or we'll stick a gas engine. They're just not doing that.
Yeah, like so BMW's Macan, doing with the 5 Series, right?
Yeah, and actually doing it very successfully. So, you know, Taycan is pure electric. Macan EV will be pure electric. And then they'll keep selling the old car, which is what, decade old now, alongside it. But yeah, going back to Taycan, I mean, there's really a lot of change. And one of the criticisms, and I think this is what you're talking about, is the standard entry-level car was really a bit slow.
Right.
And same with the entry-level Macan, two-cylinder, four, you know, even the gas cars, two-liter, four-cylinder, generally the entry-level car until you get to the 911 is always a little bit lackluster. Whereas, you know, in the Taycan, it just kind of emphasized the fact that, you know, EVs are supposed to be fast. It wasn't really. Porsche is supposed to be fast. It wasn't really. So with the new one, they've upped it to, this is single motor, rear wheel drive, 402 horsepower, 81 more than before. We drove it in Spain. We haven't had it on the track, but they're claiming 0-60 in 4.5 seconds. That's over half a second faster than the old one. And it feels it on the road. It now feels like a really nice all-round EV. I don't think you'd buy it and say, oh, this thing's a bit turgid. I don't think you'd buy it, though, and say, this thing feels really fast. And I still think the sweet spot of the range is the 4S, 0-60, 3.5 seconds, all-wheel drive, twin motor. That's just a really nice compromise. Yeah. Also spent time in the Turbo S, which, you know, 938 horsepower, and that's no longer the top of the range. And it's still, like, fabulously fast and everything else, but really, like, it's another, what, 60, 70 grand? You'd be debating whether it's really worth all that extra money.
Because we got a base car now that starts, what, at about 90,000 and really just starts to climb from there.
It does. And there's a few other things that they've changed. The air suspension is now standard across the range. And if you go for an all-wheel drive, so you go for something like the 4S with the larger battery pack, that's called a Performance Battery Plus, you can have something called Porsche Active Ride. Now, Porsche kind of loves its little names of stuff. But this is basically a new system which is designed, we've seen it on Panamera as well, which is designed to keep the body flat. And honestly, it works really well. It's another $7,000. And even the standard car is very good. So, you know, you've got to debate whether it's really worth it. But the whole idea is you've got a better low-speed ride, then the body control is really good at higher speeds. And in a vehicle as heavy as a Taycan, you know, it does feel like a good addition. And then, you know, you've got all torque vectoring. As you go up the range, you can add all the usual Porsche stuff, torque vectoring and everything else. The only thing they haven't done, which was a big surprise when they introduced Taycan, you still don't get one pedal driving or not much of it. So, you know, like in a Tesla, when you lift off the gas, sorry, lift off the whatever it is, lift off the electric.
Accelerator, throttle.
Well, once you lift off, although even throttle probably doesn't work if you think about the science.
Accelerator.
If you lift off the accelerator in a Tesla, then you get this kind of sharp braking.
Yeah.
Porsche basically decided long ago that basically you have to compromise too much of the driving experience to do that. So in a Taycan, you still have to use the brake pedal, which if you drive as many EVs as I do, feels a bit odd for the first few miles, but then your brain readjusts and it's okay. I quite like it, actually. I quite like the sort of purity of it.
Honestly, my electric truck, I don't really like the one pedal. I don't think it's comfortable for passengers, so I don't use it at all. Maybe there's a little bit of compromise on range, but I don't know if it's that significant. But I've been driving, I drove a little bit the Cybertruck, and it is on, and I just left it on. And it's a little bit different driving style, as Tesla owners would know. Not necessarily for me, but I get it. It's more comfortable, I think, driving around yourself because you can anticipate what it's going to do. But I watch passengers and they're just keep moving back and forward. And I got into an Uber and it was a Tesla, and then in the back, just like trying to look at your phone or something. And that one pedal's on, it was like a wildly uncomfortable ride. And that's not picking on Tesla. That's just picking on sort of the very aggressive one pedal, braking of cars. Like Mach-E has it and other cars have it as well.
The basic principles still apply, don't they? That you've got to have the throttle control, accelerator control, because it's the same thing. You know, like when you go racing and the race instructor says to you, it's all about how you go onto the throttle, how you come off the throttle, so you manage the weight transfer and don't. It's the same principle. And unless they've done a really bad job of tuning the accelerator for both acceleration and braking, which Tesla generally hasn't, as long as you've got a bit of feel and as long as you're a little bit progressive in how you apply and apply the throttle, then you're okay.
Yeah.
But if you drive it like most Uber drivers in LA, where it's just like using it as a switch, then you basically got horrible like neck snap on acceleration, snap on one pedal driving. So it's like somebody just jumping on the brakes. You've got to have a little bit of finesse.
So on the Taycan, have they made changes on the interior? Were changes necessary? I didn't spend much time in the Taycan. So what happened in there?
No, I mean, most of it. So the actual cabin, not really. There's a few little like technological things. You know, I got a heated steering wheel and there's a bit more Apple CarPlay integration. The only thing about the Taycan is that the rear seat is still pretty tight. If you used to, like certainly something like a Lucid Air, which we'd call a rival, or even a Tesla Model S, it's a bit tight in the back. And if you get the Cross Turismo, which is like the wagon version, which I always think is a lot cooler anyway, then that's alleviated. You get a bit more space, but it's still not like a luxury car in the back. You get way more space in the Panamera, for example. So none of that's really changed. What else has changed? Well, you get a bigger battery now, 105 kilowatts. If you go for the Performance Plus one, versus like 93 from last year. It also charges faster, so we're looking forward to putting it through the Edmunds EV charging test, because frankly the old Taycan was good. This is supposed to be even better. So this is like classic EV stuff: bigger range, faster charging, more efficient. I mean, that's what everybody's craving. So it's a bit like, it's a bit like your iPhone, that in theory every time they bring out an iPhone the battery gets better. It's the same principle, but it does mean if you've got an old Taycan, still a great car, but it's like a bigger jump. So certainly if somebody was saying to me today, would you buy a Taycan new now or wait 4 or 5 months for the 25 model year, I would say definitely wait.
Okay.
And what that means for residual values of the current one versus the new one, these are all the things that people are playing with. And residual values of EVs at the moment are not in a good place. I mean, maybe it's a Taycan and that will help, because, there'll still be a market for it, but it's, it's tricky.
Yeah. Now, you were talking about the weight and the handling, but I got to bring up another car that you guys finally put onto the test track, because we spoke about it before. You guys doing a little driving around town in the Rolls Royce Spectre.
Yeah.
And which, if I recall correctly, the kids loved.
My
but not allowed to bring the toys and the crayons into the all
no,
white.
the crayons. It's the crayons were most definitely banned. I mean, to be honest, the interior was so bizarre because this is sort of like putrid pink color that actually looked like they'd already been busy with the crayons. Yeah, if you look at the pictures, it had like the starlight roof, and then it had, if you're not watching on YouTube, how to describe this? So the side bolsters were this sort of putrid pink affair. Then the bulk of the seat is a kind of green, which is, I'm not, it's kind of like a mustard. If you think English mustard with a little bit of green thrown into it, and then cream. And if that sounds, and then sort of pink piping, if that sounds bad, to my taste at least, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean,
It's interesting because this is what Rolls-Royce picked as their demo vehicle, their press car. So you guys have had it, but now that anybody in the media that's getting a hold of this car, it is the same car and it's just cycled through the media. Because it's so expensive, they can't have that many of them. It's not like it's a Camry or a Tundra or something like that. So everyone's getting the same car, and everyone kind of has the same impressions of this interesting color combination.
yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously they built it with somebody in mind. Somebody's going to buy this. And I mean, it's always been part of Rolls-Royce. Even when you go back to like John Lennon's back in the 1960s, this idea that Rolls-Royce is this kind of like couture brand and everything's like super tasteful and understated has always been nonsense. There's always been, you know,
Yeah.
bizarre and crazy and extrovert Rolls-Royces. But yeah, this one was entertaining. But we did the range test on it. So we do the Edmunds EV range test on everything, including the Rolls-Royce. And the EPA says with the 23-inch wheels that our car had, it should go 266 miles. We did 281, which is all right. Not
Yeah.
great, but all right. I mean, a BMW i7 on 21-inch wheels, which is basically very similar to the Rolls-Royce underneath, that did 320 miles. So, I mean, 280 miles is like getting along for normal EV these days.
Yeah.
The only thing is, like, this car is built as a, you know, this car is your, like, would be wonderful to, you know, take to the house in Palm Springs or wherever you want to go. And, you know, where are you going to go? And, you know, you're going to turn up at Walmart in one of these, maybe. I don't know. You're going to have like a, what in English we would say, a chap. You know, a chap following you, maybe in a gas car to take over when you want to go and charge. I don't know how you deal with it.
Yeah, and as much as it's a great touring car, a great road trip car, I don't know that this is necessarily just what Rolls-Royce was thinking with this car. This is the daily driver for this type of customer when they also have like the SUV and the bigger cars, which maybe play a little bit more of a road trip type
I think that's right. I
of
think you
car.
take the Cullinan when you go skiing to your lodge in Aspen, and you take this when you go for lunch in Beverly Hills. I think that's, I was out in Melrose over the weekend in LA, and like you look at some of the cars like driving past there, and this is that car. And I loved it. I thought it was cool. And as you say, 280 miles, charge it at home or get somebody to charge it for you at home. And yeah, it's a
Yeah,
winner.
is this
It's a
you
cool
out front
thing.
of the Gucci store?
No, it's a nice pick there. That was one of our that is part of our team. We went and did a little photo
I
shoot
didn't know if
with
that was you
Ryan
driving
Greger,
it,
who's
or
on our social team,
yeah, maybe your
went and took
daughter
that. It's a
picked the
beautiful
photo.
picture.
It's
Yeah.
great. No, it looks great. It looks great. And you got a parking spot right out front. I don't know how early your guys got up to go take that picture.
Yeah, beautiful.
All right, so we talked about the range and we talked about this car driving it before because you drove it and we talk about it. But it was impressive on the track. Impressive for a car that's not a sports car.
Yeah, I mean, 0 to 60, I think we got it up on screen there. 0 to 60 in 3.9 seconds. That, if memory serves, was what a Ferrari F40 did.
Yeah.
Quarter mile takes 12 seconds. It's weird, you get to a certain age in life, isn't it? And like F40 is like your reference point, Porsche 959 F40, but then you realize that's actually 1989. But yeah, it's it's ample. They didn't use to quote horsepower figures at Rolls-Royce. They used to just say it's ample. And I would say that's ample. In fact, it's a bit disturbing, to be honest. It doesn't really fit with the car's character, but
Yeah, and
yeah.
I'm surprised it handled. I'm surprised it handled and it stopped as well as it did. But
Big
yeah, like
rubber and big air suspension, and you know, they've just got it's, I mean, this is a car that's really like an SUV, but it's just getting so good. I mean, the chassis tune and everything else, it's just getting so good at managing weight. And I think that's becoming more and more important with EVs or with big SUVs, that you're just getting better and better at handling the mass and kind of disguising the fact that there's actually a lot going on. There's a lot of inertia. And we'll talk more about the Turbo GT next week. But yeah, there's a lot of work going on there to manage what is still a really heavy car.
okay, let's move on to the Chevy Corvette. The Corvette that you were on the show years ago with me and Goldberg, and you guys were putting the order in, and there were some delays and kind of waiting for the vehicle. Got it, and some years have gone by, and the CA Corvette just seems like a car that you guys really, really enjoyed because you seem to hold it for quite a bit longer than the normal plan.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like, we think about that. Yeah, when we're on with, we were talking about this in the pandemic, and we bought this back. Yeah, you know, when the C8 was first launched, we kind of put our order in, and you know, it duly arrived, and we've ended up keeping it for 3 years, which, you know, normally we do 20,000 miles and get rid of them. This one we've kept for 3 years and 32. There's reasons for that. In the pandemic, we weren't able to do the same miles that we normally would. We've also used it for things like the Edmund Shoe Drags more. So we hung on to it, and it was still, you know, there was still such a huge interest in this car. And I think we've just done the video. If you go to the Edmund's YouTube channel, we've just done the video, we wrap it all up, and we've all kind of really eulogized about this thing. You know, it's still, I think we paid just over 80 grand, if memory serves right. And I was just playing with a configurator before we came around. You're still getting one of these for the mid 80s, and these days I don't think you're paying the market that you were fighting with back in the pandemic days. It's just a really nicely sorted, fast, comfortable, everyday sports car. I mean, it's bordering on supercar with when you look at all the performance, mid-engine, the whole shebang. And you know, now we have the E-Ray, which is a ton faster, but do you really need that? And then the Z06, which is very track focused and sounds incredible, but honestly, just if you spec it right, these base Corvettes are awesome.
I enjoy driving the car. I mean, not that specific one, but the one that they had in the fleet, GM had in the fleet a while ago. And yeah, super impressive and just a lot of bang for the buck and just an all around, you know, well sorted sports car. But, you know, we've got the E-Ray and we'll get to that next. You guys did a video with the E-Ray. E-Ray's not quite getting the buzz that the C8 got. And the Z06 does because it's still all engine and it's incredible performance and sound, but really kind of expensive. And it just seems like it's turning into just a flip car, right? It's just showing up at Barrett Jackson auctions and stuff like that. I just don't know. It just doesn't seem like any of these are getting talked about as much as when the C8 debuted.
Yeah, I think you're right. We were actually thinking about, should we swap this for an E-Ray? And despite the fact that I wasn't going to spend another 140 grand or whatever it is,
Not after that Rivi, or after that
not
Fisker
after we
loss,
just
you guys.
lost a load of lost just lost 60 grand on a Fisker, might as well have gone to Vegas. But yeah, you're right. I we were talking about this in the office. It's like the E-Ray was on paper pretty exciting, first hybrid Corvette, but we also just wanted to, like, is like a hybrid Corvette really the Corvette audience? And also, it's kind of trying to be more of a GT, and then you got the Z06, which is the, you know, the track version. I mean, the Z06 seems to be a car that they built it because they wanted to, and they were just like, what the hell, we're going to do a flat plane crank Corvette, and it's basically a
Yeah.
Ferrari F430 in Corvette form. But the thing is, the Z06 as well, like, not only do you say, like, a lot of them are being flipped and all the rest of it, which always kind of winds me up a little bit. But also, it's such a pantomime car. The way that it looks, the way that it sounds, you just always, it's a bit like having a GT3, but with a really silly exhaust. You know, you're always on with that car. Whereas like the standard C8, 495 horsepower, lovely V8 sound. And for the days when you just can't be bothered, I mean, on our fleet, there were days when, you know, we just drive home from the office, been a bit of a rough day, sitting in LA traffic for an hour. It's just a nice car to do that in. A Z06 is a bit more hard work. So it's, you know, go for this, like the Z51 pack. There's a few of the little things you'd add on. But you're still talking about a really good mid-engine sports car for somewhere in the 80s. Whereas, you know, if you want an equivalent 911, you know, you're going to be spending a lot more than that. Yeah. I mean, I just spec'd one out, actually, what I'd buy, and it's 83,440. So you probably add destination to that. And that's with, slight upgrade inside. Yeah, Z51 performance package. Not a lot, you know, not a lot else. So, yeah, 85, 90 grand. It's a lot of money, but it's a lot of car for that price.
A while back when this car was coming out, I had a conversation with Ken Ligenfelter, and I was like, hey, you know, you guys, big Corvette tuner, engine builder, you do a lot with these cars. What do you think? And he's like, yeah, I got a chance to drive one. We kind of went through the car, and it's just such a fantastic car. He's like, I just don't know how much room there is for a company like ours, a company like Ligenfelter to breathe on these cars. Here we are a few years later, and he's figured it out.
Yeah, I'm sure he has. Yeah.
Yeah. He certainly figured it out because there's supercharger packages and all kinds of stuff. But already, I haven't spoken to him about it. I was just following some of the news coming from the company. They took the engine out of the E-Ray and really went to work on it. Increased the horsepower, popped it back in, just the gas engine. I don't know what the total combined horsepower is. We're going to have to talk to Ken, maybe have him on the show at some point. But he took that E-Ray, which we'll show you in the next video how incredibly capable and quick that car is. And I think he just made it bonkers. It's just really just turned up to 11. But a company like Ligenfelter can do that. But I guess there is a little bit of room left to make these things even more wild, which, you know, that's the beauty of the aftermarket.
I mean, frankly, even once you get above 500 horsepower, unless you like A, going to a track and B, a really handy at a track. I mean, I'm sorry, but like, you know, once you get up to 600, 700, 800 horse, you've got to know what you're doing at a track to, you know, to when it goes that quickly. Yeah. So, but I mean, the other thing, like looking, I mean, obviously if you start tuning it and everything else, your maintenance is most likely going to go up. I was just looking at our cost to own stuff. We had some bad luck with windshields for some reason, but I think that's just more like stuff that happens. We spent $5,000 on Michelins. We had four sets of tires in 30,000 miles, but you got to remember, like ours had a hard life. You know, we take it to the track. We take it to our test track. We took it to Willow Springs a couple of times. We took it to U-Drags. You know, we did a whole bunch of stuff. And actually, over 32,000 miles, I've got the stats in front of me, we spent $1,300 on regular service. And actually, we were doing it through like the heavy use service. So total spend was like $9,500. And that's including tires. And then when you look at the residual values, we bought it for nearly 81, sold it for 61, which is a 21.4% depreciation. So when you put everything together, we spent just over $29,000 in 32,000 miles. Now, don't get me wrong, it's a chunk of change, but in terms of what that car does and the life that we gave it, that is actually okay.
Yeah.
And just to give you some comparison, at the same time period, we bought a Mustang Mach-E, which has done less miles, under 20,000 miles. And it went, in the depreciation alone, it went from early 60s, because we paid a bit of markup, down to 24, I think. So figure this out. The Corvette has cost us less to run over more miles than a Mustang Mach-E. Now, a Corvette's a specialist vehicle, and, you know, EVs are in a bit of a tough time in the used market, but they're still kind of staggering.
Yeah.
And compared to running pretty much any Exotica, that's pretty good value. 30,000 miles, like, you know, for 30 grand, 3 years, 30,000 miles, 30 grand, and a lot of track use. I think if you're just going to drive it on the road, you're not going to go through four sets of tires. You're probably not going to have to service it quite as much. Those costs come down quite a bit. You know,
right.
We do and like to, we do like to use these things.
You just got unlucky with that.
Yeah, exactly. So
lucky to the tune of $2,000.
Yeah, it's a good thing. We think we got the specs dead right. LT2 with Z51. Personally, I wouldn't have the blue that we had, but it looks good in pictures. I'd have something a little bit more understated. But yeah, it's the first Corvette that I've driven, and despite being British, I think I've driven nearly all of them in right and left hand drive. It's the first one I've driven where I think actually this chassis suits the engine. I remember driving the old ZR1, the previous generation, and you just felt like this is way too much engine for where the chassis is right now. Whereas actually the mid-engine C8, yeah, the set, the chassis, everything feels very much in tune.
Well, speaking of that, let's bring up the the E-Ray versus the McLaren 750S. You guys
did talking
a
U-drive silly things.
And yeah. I mean, because, you know, I'm sure your thought was like, hey, we're going to sell this car. Let's just go ahead and hit it hard one more time and put it up against the 750S. Now, the McLaren...
No, this is the E-Ray, Matt. This is not ours. This
I'm sorry. Yeah, the one you were selling. The E-Ray is... because you had the U-Drag ones with the C8 Corvette, and then now the E-Ray. The McLaren 720S is probably one of my favorite cars to drive of all time. I think the 720 is just a fantastic all-around supercar. And the 750S, which I haven't driven yet, is just turning it up a little bit. Now, the 765 LT, I did like that car, but again, it started getting a little bit closer to sort of that Senna thing where like the ride was a little harsh and the seats were terrible. And I'm sure there's other options for seats, but it was like not as comfortable as a 720S. And the performance in my mind wasn't worth the upgrade because the drivability and the comfort and the all around package of the 720S nailed it. So I'm hoping the 750S is that. It's a 765 LT performance, but with the comfort and drivability of the 720S.
Yeah, I mean, for full transparency, I had to look after the kids, so I didn't make this U-Drag, so I didn't drive it either with chassis. but I have driven 720s a lot. I've driven the 765, and I agree with you. Like, this 765, I remember driving it home, and it was just like, wow, this is a lot. It's a lot of concentration. And you're right. What was great about the 720, and I agree with you, I think it's just a very usable, for what is basically a hypercar, it's very usable. You've got really good visibility, surprisingly practical. I just thought this is just a really nice car. And the 750 is that with the wick turned up a little bit. It's basically pretty much a facelift. And if you look at our U-Drags leaderboard, I think we were all sort of blown away that the overall time, the 765 is the fastest car we've ever had around the course, 29.6 seconds. And actually the 750 in theory still weighs quite a bit more, so shouldn't be faster, but actually was. I mean, maybe it was actually the same time and was faster at the quarter, which kind of makes sense that the LT would be faster through the corner, but they... So it's basically the same time. So what you've got is a slightly more usable version of a 765 LT. I was a little bit surprised by that. Maybe we got a slightly better run. Maybe the conditions were a little bit better on the day. Maybe the track surface is a little bit different. You'd probably expect the 765 still to be outright faster. But to give you some context, the next up was the 911 Turbo S, which is 0.7 of a second down, and then Corvette Z06, Corvette E-Ray. So without wishing to give the game away, the E-Ray is marginally faster than the 750S, but the U-Drag is really interesting. I mean, it just shows how good the Corvette is and how much grunt the E-Ray's got, but also just how exotic and cool the McLaren is.
Have you driven the E-Ray yourself?
I haven't. That was same gig. I was trying to be sensible, and my wife was away, so I was looking after the kids. So I'm sure I will in due course, but you know, responsibilities.
We're going to throw up a link to the U-Drags video of these two cars in the description of this YouTube video. So if you're watching this video, you'll be able to click right through it. Otherwise, you can just go to edmunds.com.
Well, yeah, we can put it on social as well, I guess.
Yeah. But edmunds.com will have it. It's on their news section or their U-Drag section. I think it's edmunds.com/U-Drags.
Edmunds.com/U-Drags or edmunds.com/news. Yeah, you can see the whole leaderboard in all its glory.
Yeah, I guess we can take a look at that leaderboard real quick since we're here looking at it and you're going through it, and then we'll save the full video.
Yeah, but... Gilbert will be upset how badly the Dodge Black Ghost did, but.
But you're right. The 765 LT and the 750S were so close in overall performance. That could just be a small matter of, you know, just like you said, track conditions, weather conditions.
Yeah,
you know,
hooking
somebody's
it, yeah.
Big breakfast versus no breakfast. I know.
The thing I like about those McLarens is, and it's the same with the Ferraris as well, they're just still theater. And I think any car that costs like such an insane amount of money needs to be theater. And it was interesting. I remember when I was there when we had the 720 before, sorry, the 765 at U-Drags. I was there that day, and I did, and having it parked beside the Corvette, you can see the difference in money just in terms of like the body and the detailing. It's you know, it is like what I had on, you know, what was on my bedroom wall as a kid. It's that kind of car. And I think they have to be, because otherwise why would you spend $500,000 on one?
Yeah, I keep going back to your leaderboard, and I keep looking at the Shelby GT500 in seventh place. And I remember you driving in that video, and I still blame driver error.
the whole U-Drags concept was, and if people are listening for the first time and they're wondering what the hell we're talking about, so the background to all of this was, we were doing drag racing like so many people do on YouTube. We're like, you know, A, it feels like it's been done, and B, it doesn't show off the real attributes of the car. And the car that was really showing that to us was like the GT500, which doesn't, it's got so much power, rear wheel drive, it's quite hard to launch. So we were like, this doesn't really work, because this thing's mega under braking, mega through the corner. So we dreamt up this concept of having the Edmunds U-Drags, which is basically a sprint, a heavy brake, a corner, and then basically almost like a roll race back to the finish line.
Yeah.
Where it shows off not only straight line performance, but it shows off braking, it shows off cornering, it shows, you know, lateral grip, the whole shebang. And suddenly the GT500 showed off what a fabulous car the GT500 is, because it was able to do all these attributes. So there it is at seventh place in the place ahead of a Kawasaki Ninja, which was nuts.
What you're talking about, this type of race, the video we're talking about, the McLaren versus the E-Ray, is a great example, because the E-Ray, when you guys watch this video, the E-Ray being all-wheel drive with the electric motors versus the McLaren rear-wheel drive. But when you go through the whole gamut of this race, you see how these cars really kind of wind up performing. So it's not just, it's not about who can launch the best. It's not just the best, you know, off the line. There's an overall sort of performance aspect of it. Who can take that turn, and who's got the horsepower, and the, you know, even in this regard, the aerodynamics, the braking, the handling, you know, the whole package. It's the total package.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Okay, I think we're gonna wrap. I think we're gonna wrap things up. Oh, there was one last thing you saw. We were talking earlier about BMW M5. It's just kind of interesting. M5, maybe a new version of the M5, which is not interesting. Is at least not that new. We expected it, but a wagon variant.
A wagon for the US, yeah. Audi RS6 rival. But I'm super excited. I love wagons. I mean, like for me right now, a plug-in hybrid BMW M5 Touring would be like my ideal, on paper, my ideal car. I haven't driven it yet, obviously, but it makes a ton of sense. And I just wonder, like, there are cars in the world, and maybe this would be a good subject for a future show, you know, cars that journalists love and that nobody buys.
Yeah.
I hope people buy this, because this is the kind of car that every auto journalist in the country says, what we need is a really fast wagon because it's really cool. And then everybody with the money to spend on it says, yeah, I'll buy a Cayenne, or I'll buy a, you know, I'll buy an X5M or something. So I hope it sells. Love the concept.
Yeah.
And I think the RS6 Avant is a really, really cool car.
I know someone who just got it. Just got the new one. Just the newest version, the most high performance version of the RS6.
And I know Mercedes have done it with the AMG as well before, but yeah, this is a cool concept.
And they've had going to be what, hybrid, all wheel drive, V8 with electric motors, and it could be quite the
yeah, it's basically there's a lot of shared technology with the XM SUV. You know, that really ugly, not terribly good posing vehicle. So this is going to have, yeah, we think plug-in hybrid, 738 horsepower, or no, it'd be more than that probably. So yeah, 700 and a lot horsepower, plug-in hybrid, all-wheel drive, but probably all-wheel drive that you can throw all the power to the rear as well if you want to, you know, hoon it. So very excited by that one.
All right, perfect. And we have no idea when this is really going to come out.
It's not too far away because obviously the new five series out, so probably later this year.
Yeah. All right. Well, that'll be kind of cool to see. Hopefully, you guys get your hands on that, and then maybe we can get the U-drag of this versus the Audi.
Put a Labrador in the boot and away in the trunk, and away you go.
Yeah, there you go. All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and of course, you know where to find us on social media. But Edmunds.com is the website. Edmunds.com/news is where you get a lot of what we're talking about here, and check out the U-drag videos. As we said, we'll put links up to that, and you'll follow it up on social media as well. So. Give us a follow if you aren't following us already. Our social media links will also be in this YouTube video up on CarCast.
At Weaver on Cars, pretty lonely place.
There you go. All right, guys, thanks so much. And until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.